So today, Jerry from Sacramento will be sharing about the freedom in steps 4 through 9 for 30 minutes. Well, welcome, Jerry, everybody. Take it away. So, many years ago, somebody asked Michelangelo how he was able to sculpt the exquisite statue of David. And he said, "I didn't do it. It was God. My job was to chip away everything that was not David so the real David could emerge." So for the past 19 years, I have been removing all the layers that are not me so the real Jerry could emerge. Hi, my name is Jerry. I'm a compulsive overeater, and I've been a compulsive overeater my entire life. I was a fat baby. I was a chubby kid, and I was always an overweight adult. I was always on diets, and you know what? They actually worked, but I'd always put the weight back on. And I come by it honestly, because everybody in my family is overweight. My brother got over 300 pounds. My mom, 5 feet tall, probably weighed 250. She got so big, she could barely walk. She couldn't dress herself. She couldn't bathe herself. When my mom fell down, they had to call 911 because she couldn't get up, and she was too heavy to lift. By the end of her life, she was confined to a wheelchair. She was a prisoner inside her own body. When the doctor said, "Jerry, your mom died of kidney failure," I went, "No. My mother died of the disease of compulsive overeating." By the time she died, her organs had given up. I mean, they were just so worn out. And you know what? I have the same disease, compulsive overeating. My drug of choice has always been sugar. My second drug, white flour. What it would look like when I was really crazy was all I ate was candy, cookies, ice cream, cake, junk. I didn't eat food, real food, because after eating desserts all day, real food tasted like cardboard. And the compulsion to eat sugar followed me through my entire life. And it ruled my life. I went to a meeting once, and this woman said, "You know, I called my sponsor, and I said, listen, I hate this abstinent food. It's so boring. I give up. I'm going to go get some chocolate cake. I'm going to eat it. The hell with it." And her sponsor said, hang on, wait a minute. There's something I want you to do." She said, "What?" I said, "When you get home, take that cake, put that chocolate cake on a chair, get down on your knees, bow down to the cake, and say, 'You are my God.'" Well, that pretty much ruined it for that sponsor. She decided not to buy the cake after all. But that is my story. Candy, cookies, ice cream, desserts ruled my life, and I had to obey. But I finally hit bottom when I went through menopause. I kept getting bigger and bigger and bigger. I couldn't stop. None of my diets worked. None of my tricks worked. And I got freaked out. The gift of desperation. So I dragged my butt in 2002 to my first OA meeting in Maui, Hawaii. That's where I was living. And I went into this church in the back room full of strangers, my favorite thing. Not. They were talking about steps, traditions, and God. I thought I walked into the wrong room. But I was so desperate, I sat down and I listened. And that's when I heard people say they did the same crazy things with food that I did. They ate out of garbage cans. They ate burnt food. They ate frozen food. They stole food. And they said, "You know what? It's not your fault. You've actually got a disease and it has a name. It's called compulsive overeating. And the only way to deal with food addiction is to find a power greater than yourself to help you. And you should probably get yourself a sponsor to take you through the steps." But there was not a lot of recovery in that little group. So I got online and I found an email sponsor, a woman who lived in Seattle, in OA. She had 15 years of OA abstinence. She said, "Sure, I'll sponsor you. Go out and buy a big book. I went, a what? Yeah, Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. Buy a highlighter. Start reading. Anything that jumps out at you, highlight it, write on it, email me your writing, and I'll email yours. So that's how I started working the program, through the Big Book. Underline, write. Finally, after about a month, I said, excuse me, I have a question. How is reading this Big Book and writing it on it, highlighting it, going to help me get skinny? She said, you know, this is what I do, and it really helped me. So I agreed to work the steps, work the tools, and make a commitment to abstinence, because that's what she did. And you know what? That was 19 years ago. And this woman and I have never met in person in 19 years. But through the magic of Zoom, last year she was a speaker at her home group. Guess who was there? And the month after that, I was speaking in Roseville. Guess who came to that meeting? So she got to see me and hear my story for the first time. But here is the real miraculous thing. March 19, 2002. I put down sugar. I put down flour. I have not picked them up since that day. I have no idea how that happened. All I can think of, I was so busy reading, writing, praying, working steps, working tools. I didn't have a minute to get in my car, drive to 7-Eleven and buy crap, okay? But that has to be a God thing, because the day before, I couldn't stop. I could not do that. The rest of my story is what I call baby steps. All right, no more sugar, no more flour. My body was so shocked. Boom, 22 pounds fell off. And for the next 12 years, I did not lose 1 ounce. You want to know why? I was playing God with my food. I was in charge. All right? And in 2014, when I moved to Sacramento from Maui, I thought, I think I need to get a live sponsor. Uh-oh. I was really scared. What if she asks me to do things I was not willing to do before? So finally, I got up the nerve. I found a long timer. I said, excuse me, are you available to sponsor me? Sure enough, she said, I want you to call me every morning. I went, every morning? You know, I'm not really a morning person. Okay, I'll call you every morning. All right, I want you to read the literature. Fine. Do some writing. Meet with me every 2 weeks. We're going to go over your writing. Okay. One more thing. What else? I think you should go to 3 meetings a week, because that's what I do. So, she said, jump. And I got to say, how high? Little by little, weight started coming off again. Yes! But you know what happens. After a while, the weight loss stopped. And I went, okay, what else? So I got myself a food sponsor, and I planned my food, and I committed it, and I told her the truth about what I ate. I had never told anyone the truth about my food. I had never been willing. So I'm getting ready to email my food sponsor, and I'm thinking, God, what's she going to think about this food? It's kind of boring. You know, I eat the same thing every day. I don't know. And then I hit send. So for 6 years now, I've planned my food, committed my food, and what I felt was total relief. Relief that I was no longer in charge of my food. But you know what? I never was in charge of the food. Shirley was in charge of the food. Who's Shirley? Shirley is the name of my addict self. She's always waiting for me to screw up. While we're sitting here, she's outside working out, just waiting for me to forget that I need to work this program to be seen. So I can't explain to you why I've been willing to do all these actions or why I waited so long, but the result of all these actions has been a weight-losing abstinence. And so today I'm supposed to talk on 6, 7, 8, and 9. And I'm here to tell you the only way I've maintained my abstinence is by working the steps. And the steps have changed my life entirely, and they have set me free. So let's take a look. Step one, we admitted we're powerless over food. Our lives have become unmanageable. The principle is honesty. I honestly had to admit, I don't eat like normal people. I'm not like them when it comes to food. I had to honestly admit I was powerless over food and I needed help. And because of my food addiction, my life was unmanageable. Step two, came to believe a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity, and the principle is hope. Those first years in Hawaii, I used to listen to long-timer cassette tapes on a Walkman. That dates me. No podcasts for me. And here are some of the things I heard. I had 5 miscarriages and I didn't pick up the food. My husband left me for my best friend and I didn't pick up the food. Whoa, how did they do that? As I listened to those people share, I thought, wow, there's hope for me. I can't believe they did that. Of course, it meant I had to do what they did, but that's another story. But I had this hit. I had this hit that was going to work. I didn't quite understand why, because I still didn't know what they were talking about with these steps and traditions. Step three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. So the hope I got in step two prepared me for the faith I had in step three, and the commitment I made was to work the rest of the steps. And I've never regretted that decision. All right, here's my topic. Step four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. And the principle is courage. Step five, admitted to God, to ourselves, to another human being, the exact nature of our wrongs. The principle is integrity. My first 4-step had 67 names on it. I remember the number, 67. I blamed everybody on that list for all my problems. I didn't take any responsibility. What I finally learned was all those resentments kept me in prison. You know why? I kept thinking about them. They were taking up space. They were renting space in my thoughts. And those resentments, I ate over them. So they landed on my butt. All right? My sponsor said, why don't you work step four on each of these people on your list? So I started with the woman I was working with, who was a real bitch. She was a control freak. She wouldn't cooperate with me on work projects, and she just drove me crazy. So I looked in the big book, and the big book says, here's what you got to do. You have got to pray for that woman. I went, what? Yep, here's what it said. If you have a resentment and you want to be free, if you pray for the person or thing you resent, you will be free. If you ask in prayer for everything you want for yourself to be given to them, you will be free. Ask for their health, their prosperity, their happiness, and you will be free. Even when you don't really want it for them, and your prayers are only words, and you don't mean it. Go ahead, do it anyway. Do it every day for 2 weeks, and you will find you've come to mean it and to want it for them. And where you used to feel bitterness and resentment and hatred, you now feel compassion, understanding, and love. So I did that. I prayed for her every day for 2 weeks, and when the 2 weeks were up, I invited her out to lunch, get to know her better. We didn't talk about work, and it turned out we had a lot in common. She had been a school teacher, then a principal. Later, she became a nurse and actually married one of her patients. We had a really nice time. And from that day on, I started seeing her differently. Huh. My friend said, how can you work with her? She's such a control freak. I said, yeah, but it doesn't seem to bother me as much anymore. I don't know. When I finally got laid off from that job, that woman wrote me the best letter of recommendation of anybody I work with. Go figure. You know what they say in 12 step? Be careful who you resent. They may become your new best friend. Step 6. We're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character, and the principle is willingness. Step 7. Humbly ask Him to remove our shortcomings. The principle is humility. One of the first things my sponsor told me to do is write down all my character defects. It was several pages long. I was demoralized when I looked at that list. She said, hold on. Now, next to each defect, write the asset that you're aiming for. So I did that. She had me get a stack of 3x5 cards. On one side, I wrote the defect. On the back, I wrote the asset. She told me to carry it around in my back pocket all week, one at a time. So I had my shit detector on all day looking to see if that defect popped up. And if it did, I was supposed to flip the card and aim for the asset. I want you to know it took me about 6 months. I had a lot of ground to cover. But I started really seeing when I was the problem, okay? But instead of focusing on the steps in general, I want to focus on my major character defect, which has always been fear, okay? I always have run away from anything scary. I grew up on the East Coast and spent all my days on the beach and in the water. Now, the Atlantic Ocean is pretty damn calm, not like the Pacific. So I'd be in the water, you know, floating around, and all of a sudden, the water would be sucked up from the beach, and I'd look up, and I'd see a 20-foot wall of water, and I'd go, ah! And as fast as I could, I'd try to get to the beach, and you know what happened? That wave picked me up and smashed me down on the sand, and I'd be all bloody and scraped up, and, you know. So my friend said, next time that happens, just swim through the wave. I went, oh, come on. Did you see that wall? No way. Well, one day I wasn't paying attention, and this wall of water comes, and I swam through it, and wouldn't you know, in 10 seconds, I was on the other side. So that's what I've been learning, working the steps, to face those fears instead of running away from them. When I was a kid, they had to chase me around the block in order to take me to see the doctor. I was terrified of hypodermic needles. And you know what? I was scared my whole life of hypodermic needles. So when I was supposed to get married to my husband, we couldn't get married because I wouldn't take a blood test. But we found a loophole in the law, and we did a workaround, and we did get married. But here are my top fears, okay? Needles, blood, fear of hospitals, fear of enclosed spaces, and a lifelong fear of getting cancer. Turns out my higher power has a weird sense of humor. Because a few years ago, I was diagnosed with melanoma skin cancer. I don't know about you, when I hear the word melanoma, I think death. All right? That's what I think. I looked up, I said, God, you gotta be kidding. You know what this means? I have to go to the hospital. There's going to be blood and needles. They said it's going to be outpatient surgery. I am going to be awake the whole time. And they're going to have to cover me with a sheet to keep the germs from floating around. Shoot me now. So I did something I never do. I called people, mostly OA people. I said, I'm freaking out. I have melanoma. I have to go to the hospital. Please pray for me. I am just freaked out. Then I called a friend who's a healer. I said, I want you to send me healing energy, but I don't want you to heal my body. I want you to heal my mind and my thoughts. They're going to take me down. They're not going to help me heal at all. So the day of the surgery arrives, and I am calm. I walk into the room. I strip down. I get on the table. They cover me with a sheet. The doctor says, I'm going to give you a local anesthetic. Tell me if you feel the pain. Now, he was cutting me open, right? I didn't feel pain, but I did feel pressure, okay? And so while I'm lying there, people are coming in and out of the room to pick up supplies from the surgical supply closet. So I say to the surgeon, looks like there's a party going on. Is there anyone else you want to invite? The nurse comes over, Ben Sound says, how are you doing, Jerry? I said, can you move the sheet from my face a little? Because I have claustrophobia. I'm doing fine. How's the surgeon doing? So I'm lying there, getting cut open, making jokes. That's a miracle. It was all over in about an hour. 3 days later, the surgeon called and said, talk to the lab. They said, I got it all, and it did not spread. So there I was, swimming through a wave of fear, right? But the truth is, even now, my first reaction to anything new, anything scary, any situation out of the blue is, I just found out I was speaking today, this morning. When Judy called, I put my hand over the phone and went, and then I said, okay. So, what does it feel the fear, do it anyway? So a few years ago, they asked me to be program chair of the Region 2 Convention in Sacramento. And I said, no way. You want to know what a program chair does? A lot of things that are scary. You have to call over 200 people in order to get 125 speakers. These are people you don't know. Then you have to make sure they all show up. And they're addicts. They may not show up. Then you have to multitask. I am so bad at that. Then you have to get up early every morning during the convention and check all the rooms and make sure there are scripts and microphones and timers. Anyway, even though I said no, God tricked me. They found another OA who loved making phone calls. He loved networking. He said, I'll be your co-chair. I said, okay, sign me up. I can do the programs. I can do the flyers. I love that. Sign me up. But since I wasn't done learning a fear lesson yet, my co-chair dropped out of the convention committee and dropped out of OA. That meant I had to call all those people. I had to find 125 speakers. I had to multitask. I had to deal with people who didn't do what they say they would do. My routine was thrown off. I was not in charge of the food, my own food. I wasn't getting enough sleep. But here is the good news. Working the steps saved my ass at that convention. And here's how that happened. I found a guided meditation. I uploaded this meditation to my iPod. I made a CD out of it. I played it in my car. I listened to it every day when I was driving. I played it in my hotel. I played it during my breaks. And here is what it said. We surrender now who you are and what you do. May you become the person God would have you be, that you would do as God would have you do. And we pray, dear God, where would you have me go? What would you have me do? What would you have me say and to whom? And on this day and every day, may the light of God now pour forth upon you, upon your soul, upon every aspect of your being, that you might now be a light unto others. May where you walk today, may where you stand, be holy ground. May every encounter be a holy encounter. We salute with love everyone we will meet today, everyone we know, and everyone we do not yet know. We pour forth light in front of us into every situation and every circumstance we will experience. And I slowly came to realize this was not about me. It was about service. It was about being useful to those 125 speakers who were nervous and peeing in their pants. It was about offering messages of hope through those speakers to people who attended the convention. So when the convention finally arrived, I was totally calm. And I was calm throughout the full weekend. Thank you, God. Thank you, Steps. But the last thing I want to share about fear is this. This is truly amazing. When I was a kid, I threw up every morning for school. Because we moved every couple of years. I was always the new kid. I was always the fat kid. And I always got teased. I was terrified of going to school. But I forgot to stop feeling that way. And every morning, throughout my adulthood, I woke up going, what's going to happen to me? And I was just terrified. I was afraid to show up at a new job or any kind of new situation. Sometime over the last 19 years, I don't know when, I don't know the date, I stopped waking up afraid. I got through a bankruptcy, losing jobs, getting flooded out of my home, my mom's death, my dad's death, and I didn't freak out and I didn't eat over it. To me, that's true freedom. Step 8. Made a list of all persons we had harmed, became willing to make amends to them all. The principle of self-discipline. Step 9, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. Principle is love, brotherly love. I always say to my sponsees, if you're going down the street and you see someone coming towards you and you want to avoid them, you may have unfinished business with that person. You may owe them an amends. So recently, I'm scrolling through Facebook and this photo pops up and I go, ah! It was a woman who used to work for me in Maui, and she was the transportation secretary of my nonprofit. She was great. So I promoted her to volunteer coordinator, and she was terrible. It was a different skill set. She bombed. And I was terrified we were going to lose our grant, so I kind of was on her case all the time. And I was about to fly to California to take care of my elderly parents, and I got an email from her with two words. I quit. So when her face came up and went, uh-oh, Jerry, I think you owe her amends. So I wrote her an amends letter. I apologized for my unforgivable behavior. I was terrible, I'm telling you. And I ate crow. Her initial reply was pretty much, go put it where the sun don't shine, girl. And then she added, you know, I heard a rumor that you told people you fired me, and I had a hard time finding a job because of that. So I wrote a second email. I sent her a letter of recommendation. I assured her. I told the board she quit, and I'm happy to give her a reference. So she emailed me back. She says, you know, I'm starting my own business. Would you like to be my business partner? You're really good at all the administrative stuff. I said, oh, thank you. I'm really flattered. I wish her well. And I don't worry about running into her anymore. Thank you, God. So that's step 9. It's been my experience, the solution to weight gain has nothing to do with my food and everything to do with working the steps with a sponsor, but doing a better job than I did before. So when I focus on making amends, somehow spiritual weight is lifted. And I've actually had the experience of losing weight and not changing my food at all. But I always seem to put off those amends because, you know, I don't want to suck it up and do it. But when I do it, I always feel better. So I notice there's somebody who's been stuck on my step 4 list for 19 years, never made it to my step 8 list. And that's my mother. My mother was a narcissist. So to protect myself, I avoided her as much as possible. That was my best thinking. But I have a new big book sponsor, and she said, here's a shovel. Start digging. Dig down deep. No workarounds. She handed me column 4, column 5, and step 4, and said, fill it in. What was my part? What did I do? Where was I selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, or frightened? I'll tell you something. It was not pretty. She made me dig way down to see how I contributed to the entire situation. It was an eye-opener. I'd been so busy pointing the finger at her and at the way she harmed me, I never stopped to consider the harms I had caused her. So my mother finally made it to step 9. And this is what I wrote to her. Dear Mom, deep in my heart, I believe I hurt you and caused you harm. You were a loving mother. You had every right to expect love and emotional support from me. You deserve to be treated with kindness and consideration. I was judgmental, critical, and resentful. I wanted you to be different. I blamed you for my problems. I withdrew love and caring. I was not kind or supportive. I pulled away and abandoned you. I was self-centered and concerned only with my needs and what I felt I should be getting from you. I'm sorry I wasn't the loving daughter I could have been. I love you, and you deserve better than how I showed up for you. Please forgive me and accept my heartfelt regret for my behavior and for any other harms I may have caused you. I'm grateful I was able to treat you with love and kindness before you passed. May you rest in peace. Love, Jerry. And I knew I was done. I finally said goodbye to my mother. It was over, and I was released. My 9th step amends to my mother was a gift to me, and I was finally set free. Thank you for having me here today.